doubts that I want to name a few people before saying any other words. These people should have had their names in the order of service, but I accidentally sent Wendy the wrong version, the one I was still working on, not the one that should have been. So the names are Sharon Bianco, Mary Rose Curtis, Ruth Douglas, Joni Freeman, Deborah Harkrider, Stephanie Jones, Arthur and Mickey Meyer, Sally Kate Park, Dave Redding, Glenn Short, Johanna Woodchild, Barbara Yeaman. These are the folks who make up our Forever Green group, and there's an additional 16 people on their mailing list. These are the people in our community whose commitment to caring for this earth is one of their reasons for being in this community. You know, I often remind people of one of the things our Unitarian ancestor, Edward Everett Hale, said about how being only one person, we cannot hope to do everything that needs to be done, yet that for each of us, there is something that we can do to make a difference. And because none of us is able to do everything, each of us must make sure to at least do that something that we can. The folks I just mentioned have found that at least one of the things they can do in this world is to work and to work hard to keep this world healthy and well. After all, as Sharon has said to me on a few occasions, from her point of view, if we were to fix all of the other injustices in the world, but the world dies, it won't really matter all that much. Johanna sent me an excerpt from a poem by Robert Weston that she thought apropos today for today, and I agree. This is our home. Out of the stars we have come, rising from rock and sea, kindled by sunlight on earth, arose life. Ponder this thing in your heart. Ponder with awe. Out of the sea to the land, out of the shallows came ferns. Out of the sea to the land, up from darkness to light, rising to walk and to fly, out of the sea trembled life. Life from the sea, warmed by the sun, washed by rain, life from within, giving birth, rose life, rose love. This is the marvel of life. Rising to see and to know. Out of your heart, cry wonder. Sing that we live. My wife was out in California last week visiting one of her sisters, and one of the things they did was to spend some time in the Sequoia and Kings County National Parks. She brought home a CD postcard, a video of some of the parks, and set to beautiful music. We watched it yesterday, and several times I found myself tearing up. I kept thinking of the world, the words of St. Ralph Waldo Emerson, words that he wrote in his journal after an afternoon wandering around Walden Pond. I declare this world is so beautiful, he wrote, that I can hardly believe it exists. I declare this world is so beautiful that I can hardly believe it exists. I'll bet that each of us has at least one place that we've been, maybe only once, maybe several times, that is so beautiful we can hardly believe it exists. I've been blessed by being in a whole lot of such places over the years, and they've not all been grand. I often say to my kids as we're driving around looking at some fabulous cloudscape or the springtime woods lit up with rose redbud, I'll say, kids, we live in an amazing world, don't we? And they say, yeah, Dad, sure. But maybe one day they'll be saying it too. We live in a world that's so amazing, it's hard to believe that it's real. So as I said, I'm sure that all of us have some place or other that matches that description, and I thought it might be moving for us to hear from one another. So if you have a place that has touched your heart so deeply that you can't believe it exists, let me know and I'll bring you a mic and you can tell us about it.
Well, first and foremost is home and my neighborhood, which is out in Nelson County and is gorgeous, with a 360-degree view of the mountains and the trees. And I've been spending a lot of time out in the woods doing the Virginia Master Naturalist course lately, all the way up and down the mountains and exploring and learning. But I also wanted to tell you just a tiny bit about 2 years or so that I spent in the Galapagos Islands, which is an absolutely incredible place that if you ever get a chance, an opportunity to go and to spend more than just a few days there, or more than just a week, it's nature on your doorstep, nature walking all over you. You have to avoid the birds. You could practically kick them away. the iguanas and the tortoises and birds and fish and sea lions and incredible, incredible wildlife and beautiful vistas too. And also endangered by invasive species, both plants and animals, and by people's short-sighted visions. But with a lot of help and work from people who've been there for many, many years trying to manage in a wise way and allow people to get to experience such an amazing place.
So one place that I'll always remember is the Blue Ridge Swim Club as a place that's so beautiful. We can't even believe that there's a pool like this. My family has always called it the pool in the woods, and when we took Sylvie there when she was about 2, I remember she said, "Oh yeah, that's the place where the universe lives."
I moved here in January from very southern Utah. The town I lived in was basically geographically in Zion National Park. Virginia is a lot gentler of a place in a certain way, but there's something that's really beautiful and really stark about that part of the world, if you've ever been there. You get these big sweeping rock formations that have just been created out of wind and water, and it's really extraordinary. But the thing that I wanted to highlight was slot canyons. If you ever get a chance, the best thing about Utah. Slot canyons are carved out by the water. I mean, the Grand Canyon is a giant slot canyon. But the thing that's really neat and that you see a lot in Utah are these, you walk in the water and the walls will just get higher and higher and higher, and they're very narrow. They're usually about the size of, you know, 2 people walking next to each other. There's a really famous one in Zion National Park where you're walking through the river and then you kind of turn the corner and you realize there's just these walls of rock probably 80 feet high on both sides of you. It's a little like being in Manhattan and being in the woods at the same time. It's really neat.
I was on a plane trip recently, and it was a really nice plane trip, and I got to see how big the world was and how lovely it was and just how important it is to maintain and kind of do good by.
It's a great dilemma to think about bestest places and all, and it seems like we're drawn to places because of the contrast with what we know and different and how rugged or whatever. But it's really so much about for me, for the people you connect with, and it harkens back to a famous compilation of pictures called The Family of Man that was pulled together by a curator. And but seeing those similarities, that it comes in different costumes, skin color, religion, pattern, all that, of what pulls us together. Too long ago, Barbara and I were fortunate to go to Bali, and I'm a complete mind changer. And never have I been in a society that was so bursting with expression, creativity, and was so encouraged. And it is like everybody had to dance, dress up, music, write, paint, and kids that could just barely stand up would have a paintbrush in their hand or would be dancing all the time. And to take a slice from the Galapagos, was the diving in Bali was just phenomenal. And to see a culture that's so at peace with the water and all that, and then now to think of Indonesia as one of the kind of harbingers of a lot of radical politics and stuff. And so that jarring memory of the risk, and we were there right after the second, what's termed the second disco bombing, so the place was really concerned, and they were always fawning over us. Do you feel safe? Is your social security okay? That was the big question. We're like, please just, oh, no, it's lovely, but the concern and all. So phenomenal memories.
When I was a kid, we went for several years in a row on vacation to a state park in New York State, Robert Treman State Park, and it's near Ithaca, and so it geologically has gorges in it, and there are hikes from the lower level to the upper level on both sides of the gorge, and a place to cross over in the middle, and a gorgeous swimming pool that makes it to the top 10 swimming holes in the U.S. pretty frequently. And all of it was built in the Depression by the WPA. And so I think of it today because my sister still goes there on vacation once a year just because she just has a heart connection to the area. And I said to her, you don't even hike, and it's too cold to swim, so why do you go there? But it just is, it's in her blood. She just feels it. And she told me that because of winter storms and just natural damage to the area, that the trails are closed now. You can't make a through trail, and the crossing is closed. And there's no money in the state budget to fix it. So I just thought of it this morning that we owe so much to the people who had the foresight to put in the state parks and the national parks that we enjoy. And they are, you know, I could lift up a lot of wonderful places that I've been to, and a lot of them are not accessible to everybody, but there are local in state parks that really are accessible on a very tiny budget to all of us, and I feel really grateful for those places.
Hi, I'm fortunate enough to have grown up in the Cumberland Mountains in Tennessee, about halfway between Nashville and Chattanooga. In a little town called Sewanee, up on the mountains, there were forests all around us. I grew up in the forest. And at the edge of the mountain, you could look down in what we call the valley. All the surrounding land below us, we call the valley. So this was a little Shangri-La that I grew up in.
Just one more.
So a few years back, I had this amazing opportunity to volunteer with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service up in Alaska. And I jumped on that opportunity. And I got to go to a place that's on the Aleutian Island chain off of Homer, tiny island called the Barren Islands. And it was between Homer and Kodiak Island, where all the people talk about bears and lots of bears. We had no bears on this island, which was great because we were there because of the amazing seabird colonies. And I just want to paint this picture for you because it's something that not a lot of people get to experience. And we would, for our fieldwork sites, we'd get on this aluminum-hulled little inflatable boat, and when the weather was not too choppy, we would go out on the open ocean and skirt around the island, and as you came around, you just had this massive cliff in front of you, and the closer you got, the louder it got, and you could hear all these squabbling birds, and you got closer, and you could just, like, smell them. I mean, the stench of a seabird colony is something you will never forget in your entire life. And you look everywhere and there's these rocky crevices, and we, you know, our work involved being out there for 4 or 5 hours at a time and just looking at them. And I, you know, we had pictures of the colonies from past years, and it was sort of a where's Waldo? Like, okay, is Waldo here this year? Did Waldo have a baby? Did the baby hatch? And you just sort of look, and we were doing population counts and chick survival, and, you know, so a lot of it was just watching and being out there and being in this constant movement and flurry of activity and cacophony. And it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible to see throughout the season that these cliffs were just living, breathing birds. And then slowly over the course of 2 months, these birds would grow up and hatch and then just dive into the ocean, and then they're on their own. And, you know, we wish them the best, and they do it all at the same time, same year, next year, same place. And it's, for me, it was amazing to get to see a place that doesn't have to have people there to function exactly as it should be, and just knowing that it's there, knowing that things are working to keep that there, was amazing for an experience.
I know that I'm cutting off a conversation that could continue for probably hours, if not days and weeks. Luckily, there's this thing called the social hour. And people are always wondering, what can I talk to strangers about? I don't know. Talk about this. Go up to somebody you don't know during the social hour and say, what's your amazing place? And let me tell you about mine. What we've just been talking about, what we've been thinking about, is what the people here and around the world who are striving for eco-justice are working to protect. This world, so beautiful that it can be hard at times to believe that it is real, is in real danger of not being. And it's up to us to keep it alive. There's a chant, it's in our teal hymnal, one song before Turn the World Around. The world is our mother. We must take care of her. Her sacred ground we walk upon with every step we take. The earth is our mother. She will take care of us. It can be easy to fall into despair, to think that we're too far gone to come back, that we've already gone over the brink. But it's so important to keep our hope alive and to know that there are people all over this planet working hard to take care of her. In the original version of this sermon, before I realized I needed to hear your beautiful places, I had this long list of people and groups doing amazing things to change the way we power our world, the way we live our lives, so as to make a real difference. But having done this, I can't do that. But I do want to mention one. Among the sustainable energy alternatives like wind, solar, geothermal, tidal, others, one that is seen by some as a mixed blessing is nuclear power. There's a scientist that I learned about who's been working on the problem of making nuclear power safe and practical, And he's designed a kind of mini reactor that could provide energy for up to 20,000 homes while consuming the nuclear waste and other fossil fuel waste that we haven't known what to do with. In fact, his plan calls on the store of decommissioned nuclear weapons to fuel his plants. This scientist certainly has creds for this work. He's one of only 37 people in the history of the world to have built a working fusion reactor. And what's really amazing is that he did it in his garage at the age of 14. He's now 19 and as committed to finding answers to the problems facing our planet as he was at the beginning of his career 5 years ago when he was my kid's age. Oh, there is hope. There is work to be done, of course, but there is hope. To celebrate that hope, our Forever Green folks will be giving out hardwood seedlings at their table during the social hour. Take one home. Plant it. Declare your faith in the future and help create one more CO2 scrubber. Later this year, the group will plant one here on our property in memory of Katie Couriche, a dedicated and energetic environmentalist, member of this congregation, who died last year. Her example and her commitment and her courage remains a source of inspiration and hope as well. This world filled with all those places that are so beautiful, we can scarcely believe they exist. It is our home, and it will take care of us if we take care of her.